Welcome to the Epic Echo, a podcast designed to reflect the lives and voices of our community and hosted by the Eastern Panhandle Empowerment Center. The content of today's episode may be difficult or triggering for some listeners to hear. If you need support, please call our 24/7 helpline at 304-263-8292.
Welcome back to another episode of the Epic Echo. I'm your host, Brittany, and today we have a special guest. Her name is Wendy. Wendy, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. So I am a clinical social worker and currently serve in the role of Director of Counseling Services with Sheppard University. And I guess I can tell you that my name is Wendy Baraka. We may have gone over that already, but just in case. I have been working here at Sheppard in counseling services since 2018 and had a couple of other roles here prior to that. And I was a student at Sheppard in the 90s. So I dig this place and I really love working with college students. And the campus partners here are amazing, dedicated professionals. So that's, you know, my main role. I also do, I'm a certified yoga teacher. So I do some yoga with students on campus through the Wellness Center. And I'm also a certified trainer in the Nurtured Heart Approach, which I will be recertifying in that approach coming up soon in October and use it quite frequently with my work and personal life. So do a lot of different fun things.
That sounds exciting.
In a nutshell.
So you're kind of like a legacy there. You've been there for a while then at Sheppard. It's cool that you went there first.
Yeah, that's a fun word, a legacy. Yeah. It feels like home to me here. I remember first coming onto campus for a tour and feeling right at home in the community too. I mean, Shepherdstown is just a wonderful place. And I grew up in Alexandria, Virginia. So it was a lot of like suburbs and a lot of friends, a lot of folks that my family was connected to, but I always kind of craved a smaller town existence. And yeah. So, you know, coming here was something that was just a good fit.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great school. I went there too, and I think it's wonderful. And I mean, it's really awesome that you got to go there and then work there. I mean, it seems like a great place to work. Everyone that I've met, specifically in counseling and the different like academic support services and stuff, everyone speaks pretty highly of it. So
yeah, we have a lot of alumni who work here too.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's a pretty cool aspect of Sheppard.
Yeah. So I guess we'll just get a little more into explaining about like Suicide Awareness Month and why that's important to you specifically. Yeah. I will say that going to the presentations and stuff that you've done, it's really weird to say that I met someone who's so comfortable talking about suicide, but you're very comfortable talking about it, which is really amazing because I sat through that Green Bandana presentation and I was like, can I do this? Yes, yeah. I can. Is it comfortable for me? Absolutely not. But the comfortability level that you've reached with it is incredible.
Well, I thank you for, you know, reflecting that. It has taken a long time to gain this level of familiarity and comfort. And I also have to acknowledge that it's still something that I think any of us, even if we've provided suicide risk assessments for a length of time, there's always some discomfort because it's life or death matters that we're talking about here. And we all have, you know, some level of personal connection, whether we've lost someone, you know, in our family or community, or we've endeared ourselves to someone in the realm of celebrity, that has died by suicide, it's something that has an impact that's different. So I think it's so important to me to help teach the skills that can make a difference and getting people to the help that they need, to teach the behavior and the clues that can lead us to recognize when someone's in distress and needs some compassion and a conversation and maybe a connection to resources. When I became certified to teach the question, persuade, respond, or QPR program here on campus, it included a deep dive into the history of suicide throughout different cultures and timeframes, and the responses throughout different cultures and timeframes. And it's really alarming, you know, to know that in the United States, it's somewhere around 44,000 people every year die by suicide. And the QPR model talks about how it's preventable with intervention. And we know also, though, that we can't always prevent it. So it's natural to have that fear, that pressure feeling of talking about suicide or, you know, taking the initiative to learn more about it or to gain the skills and have the courage to like step in and do something to help someone who's really struggling. But it's also something that everyone who has a heart and is connected to human beings and is a human being can learn. And we can all make a difference. And that's what excites me and gets my juices flowing, you know, as far as being able to see every QPR training and Green Bandana in particular as an awesome opportunity to help other people feel like they can make a difference in the lives of the people we love and are connected to.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. I felt like the QPR presentation was really great. I mean, I obviously in this role, my role, and at any rape crisis center, domestic violence center that deals with all the victimizations that we service, suicide definitely can play hand in hand in that. There are plenty of people who also need suicide prevention services, and being able to provide that, but in a caring, trauma-informed way, can sometimes be really difficult. And I think that I didn't even know that the QPR presentation or the Green Bandana Project was a thing. And I think it's something that a lot more people should know about and should take, because I feel like it gives you tools. It gives you the specific words to say and like scenarios that you go over and ways you can help people. And it does help with being preventative. And like, you're not just like, go out and ask people if they're going to commit suicide and make sure you're there for them afterwards. It's very precise about like, these are the questions that you can ask. This is how you can persuade someone. This is what you can do afterwards if you don't feel like you can help. Because we went over like the 3 D's of the direct, delegate, and
distract.
Yes. Yeah. I always forget that one. So I thought it was really informative, and I was surprised that as many people showed up as did, honestly.
Yeah. So far we've had 2 Green Bandana trainings, and the purpose of the Green Bandana Project is to train peers. So these are students that are coming to receive this information, knowing that they are so much more influenced by one another at this age and stage in the traditional college age student, and that they have a role to play in being allies. And so when they're coming to the training and they're learning these skills, like you're describing, they still may walk out feeling concerned or intimidated, but they have some basic information. And I'm going to plug that they also get a booklet to take away with all the information that they can refer to. And so then it's less, I guess the word I keep coming back to is intimidating. It's less intimidating when you feel like you have some skills and knowledge. That doesn't mean it isn't still scary. And, you know, how many times during any given day do we show up even when we're afraid? That is courage. And so it is wonderful to see that there are students that are coming and taking advantage of this program. We have another one coming up in November. We've also trained our student affairs division in this method, and our residence assistants and hall directors. So the student leaders that are on the front lines of helping our residential students in dorms are also getting this information. And so one of the things that I learned in my training with QPR, and I learned so much, is that getting this information in the hands of everyday people is vital. You don't have to be a clinician. You don't have to be an educator. You don't have to be a medical professional. Right. Because if you're someone who has friends, if you're someone who has family, if you're someone who's part of a congregation, who works in a system, then you are bound at some point to encounter someone who's struggling with mental health. And not all mental health challenges will include suicidal thinking or behavior. However, we know that especially among ages 10 to 24, it's the second leading cause of death. Yeah. So young people have more pressures and more stress and need more skills to navigate life than maybe
absolutely
times past, right? So it can help not only to figure out like how to assist other people, but also to take a look at ourselves. Like, when am I struggling? And can I use my awareness to recognize that if I'm feeling some depression, if I'm feeling some anxiety, it is so important to seek help. It is not anything to be ashamed of. If we are human, we have mental health.
Absolutely.
Just like we have physical health. We're somewhere on that spectrum.
Yeah. I will say one of my favorite parts of the presentation is towards the end when you explain to the RAs that, like, you're trying to equip them with all of these trainings and all of this information, but it's also not expected that they're going to be comfortable with everything. And you were like, use the people around you. Like, if you can't handle it, find someone who can. Go to a counselor. I love that you added that in there.
Yeah, it's so important because we aren't always ready, you know, to take on a challenge like this. And yet if we can find someone who is, and if we know we're not alone in this, you know, there are people that have our backs, and that if we partner up, then, you know, we're going to get someone to the help that they need. There's no shame in knowing our limits and knowing also our triggers. So absolutely. I like to recognize that, you know, sometimes, especially with professionals and student leaders on campus, we have our own experiences. And we might have a different comfort level with a certain issue based on things that have happened to us. And so we don't expect everybody to be all things to anyone. And we're a team. And that's the thing that we're focusing on, is how, as a team, can we help each other create a culture of caring, have really useful, beneficial information that we share, and show up for people, you know, in all the times, not just when things are going right.
Yeah, I fully agree. I don't have a lot to compare it to, but I would just love to say that I feel like your RAs are very prepared. Like, even if they don't feel comfortable doing something, you've at least handed them the information for it. And not just with suicide awareness. I know, like, some of the other RA trainings, and like, we did RA trainings, EPIC as well, for the Shepherd students, as far as like stalking and how to handle if somebody discloses a sexual assault. And of course, those things can also lead to suicidal tendencies or wanting to commit suicide or being very depressed and needing help. And it's good that they also have the QPR as well, because then it's like, okay, well, if this happens, if they experience victimization and they're feeling this way, these are things that you can say to them afterwards. This is how you can help them. So I feel like, I mean, I don't know about other schools. I don't deal with a lot of the other colleges, but as far as Shepherd, I do feel like the RAs are rather equipped.
Yeah, we have a tremendous residence life program and leaders who care and definitely have their finger on the pulse of, you know, the trends with regard to social, emotional, and mental health, and provide these amazing opportunities. And then we all get to come in and partner to offer this information and share and discuss. And it's really great how we work together here, and how, you know, every department on this campus is thinking about student success and well-being. Yeah. We don't just want them to get their degree. We want them to be well.
Yes.
And we want them to know that this is such an excellent time to build a toolbox for your mental health, to learn how to set boundaries, to figure out what your limits are, to ask for help when you need it, and to have free access to things like mental health care and physical health care and family planning and education on consent and what to do when you experience assault, harassment, inequities, microaggressions. Like,
yes.
All of this information is so vital so that we can create a better world. I mean, that's ultimately what we're trying to promote.
Yeah, I definitely felt when we left the RA training, there were at least a couple. I mean, all of the RAs seemed pretty great. I got to meet, I think, all of them, or at least most of them. There were about like 40 people there, and that seemed like a lot of RAs. So I feel like I met all of them. But there were definitely a couple that I was like, they're going to do great things. They're going to leave here. They're going to do great things here. They're going to go on out in the world and do great things there too. And you could just tell. So I'm very excited for the group that you all have this year.
Yeah, me too. And we are offering a bit more in terms of support this year. So we're trying to be as protective as possible. And it's difficult to be in a student leadership position and to have to approach students in crisis when we have our own stress loads.
And
student leaders are also in the classroom, and they're also in their clubs and organizations, and they also might have a job, and they also, you know, may have family responsibilities. So not only learning about how to take care of others, but also themselves.
Yes.
And to know that they can come and talk to us. We're going to be creating some groups that are specific to providing ongoing support to our student leaders, giving them a chance to unpack situations and get some feedback, get some encouragement, because the more we get in front of groups of students, the more we can also remind them how amazing they are.
Yes.
and what it means to show up the way that they do.
Right.
So just trying to increase the protective factors all around campus.
Absolutely. I did want to take a minute to talk about the two specific suicide prevention groups that you have on campus, which they may have even been there when I was there. I'm not sure. I don't remember really knowing about it, but I feel like they've definitely gotten the word out and more people know that they exist now. So that's really cool. So you have Rams Care, and then you have the, I cannot remember their title, but the athletic.
Yeah. One. The Hidden Opponent.
Yes. I keep wanting to call them the WHO, and I'm like, that's not it. I know that's not it. It's THO. Okay. Yeah. So I just thought they were really cool groups. I liked that they spoke at the suicide vigil, as well as I went to the Rams Rally for Respect, and yes, they spoke there as well, which I thought was really awesome. But I think it's really important that we have specific student-led groups for people who are struggling, because sometimes it's harder to go to, say, counseling or an RA or somebody that's in charge versus just a group that has more students that are struggling with the same feelings as you are.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really cool. And I definitely, Obviously, like, suicide is one of the biggest leads among the 10 to 24 year old age group. You touched on that before. And there's a lot of suicides that happen with college students. There's a lot of pressure that comes with being a college student, and you have all of these things, and sometimes people feel like they're not succeeding enough. But I didn't really think about how much it affects the college athletes before I went to the suicide vigil. And knowing that there was a group specifically for them, I thought was really important, actually. And I had no idea that there were so many athletes each year that end up committing suicide because they feel like they don't have support.
Yeah, so Rams Care and the Hidden Opponent were initiated both by students who recognized the need for peer-led support and peer-led mental health initiatives. And that's been a trend for a while across universities and college campuses. And it makes sense. Young people are more likely to reach out to one another than they are to the adults in their lives. And developmentally, they're differentiating from their families and, you know, becoming independent and taking the reins on their choices, the structure of their lives, et cetera. While they're also doing things like earning a degree or advancing in their sport or trying to pay for college. So we think, you know, the call of the traditional age college student and non-traditional age college students, because we may just go ahead and assume that non-traditional age college students may have even more on their plate. A lot of people work full-time and go to college part-time. They have families. They are, you know, booked as well. When it comes to student athletes, what we know is that there's more time constraints. So when I was a student athlete here at Shepherd, I had a start and a finish to my season. And nowadays, student athletes are conditioning year round. They have practices year round, or they are, you know, in the weight room. And so there's more time that they're devoting to their sport and that they're expected to devote to their sport. They're taking a similar course load as other students while also balancing practice schedules, conditioning, games, travel, which takes them away from campus for a certain period of time on a regular basis throughout the season. So they have to make up that work. And they are also, you know, experiencing the higher level of competition. A lot of student athletes are coming out of high schools where they were top dog, right? And then they're coming to a college campus and they're one of many top dogs. And so there could be, you know, just that sense of having to stay strong, stay sharp, stay focused. Sometimes there are students who get injured and they're afraid to talk about their injury. Or there might be pressure for them to play through an injury. There might be injuries that are season ending or career ending.
Right.
And when your identity for so long has been tied so much to your being an athlete, that's hard. And there's other unique pressures too. I mean, there can be pressures from coaches, pressures from parents, from the community itself, because a lot of athletics at the collegiate level are also money makers for the campus. And, you know, we also do a lot of information sharing with athletic department staff. We train coaches on common mental health struggles to increase their mental health literacy. And we train the athletes themselves on, you know, what are some common symptoms of depression and anxiety? What are the strengths that athletes already have that can help them with managing their mental health? But what are some of the unique pressures and challenges that they have that can get in the way of them being successful? And so when you're in the spotlight and you are expected to perform top level and perform in the classroom to maintain eligibility and do any other number of things that typical college student wants to do, which is hang out with your friends, be social, relationships, etc. It's a lot. So we definitely want to acknowledge the unique challenges and strengths and talk about it.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
We don't sweep things under the rug anymore.
Right.
We've got to talk about it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's really important that you do, especially because maybe I didn't think about it as much because I wasn't in the athletic department in college. I didn't play any sports or anything. And there is a lot of pressure that comes with that. And you touched on like the fact that it's a money-making business. Like they're bringing in people to watch games. They're making money for the college. They're expected to perform at their highest level in more than one aspect. And one of the reasons I didn't do any of the extracurricular stuff like that in college was because I wanted to be able to enjoy college. And I didn't really think about it that way. Like it's important to them. It could lead to their next steps of their life, but it's also makes things a lot harder. Like the average college student probably isn't thinking that someone who is also on the basketball team has a lot more pressure, or the football team, or whatever, than what they're experiencing. So I think it's important that you are letting everyone know. And it's really great that you all train the coaches and stuff too, because they are on the forefront of that. Like they get to watch their athletes, and they're firsthand going to see the downfall or the depression that's happening or anything. Like they're going to notice that probably before other people because they're spending more of their time with them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And if they can know what the warning signs are, and even just come to a point where they recognize the importance of getting someone who's struggling to help, and shifting a little bit on that focus that's just all too easy with being highly competitive and encouraging students to do their best, but also recognizing that a student isn't necessarily going to do their best if they don't have good mental health. So it's important that we all recognize we have a role to play in our own attitudes and how we approach someone who's struggling, how we can decide to show empathy and compassion.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean we throw boundaries and expectations out the window.
Right.
But we learn to balance those boundaries and expectations with compassion. Because when someone who's struggling gets the help that they need, they recover, and then they can get back out there and be, you know, sometimes even better than they were before. But if the person doesn't feel like they can speak up, if they feel like they're going to receive some negative consequences from being honest about their suffering, whether it's through physical injury or mental health condition, overwhelm or burnout, and they suffer in silence, that's when things can get so rough that, you know, somebody starts to think there's no other way out. And what's super alarming is the highest profile student athlete suicides in the last 2 years. You hear people say they didn't see it coming, that these students were stars. These students were captains of the team. These students were stellar in the classroom, and you just didn't see it coming. And if somebody doesn't feel like they can be honest about what's torturing them, because they're not sure they can trust that the people around them will believe or help them seek help, you know, that perception is strong. And that's why we have to talk about this stuff and skill build and push through, you know, sometimes our own attitudes and thoughts, you know, about what someone else might be going through, because we don't always know. We don't know unless they tell us.
Right.
So it's just vital. It's vital that we talk about this, that we work together, and that we reflect to our students that we know what could be going wrong and that we're there to help them get back on track, get the care that they need, and they're worth it.
Yes. Yeah, I think you said it best when you touched on compassion really is key, and just letting them know that even if they're not struggling with anything now, that they may, and that you're there for them and you're going to believe them and you're there to help them, that they don't have to face it alone. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of interesting that you said about the star athletes that have committed suicide recently and how people didn't know and they were a star and how they didn't see it coming. But honestly, that in itself is kind of a warning sign, because if they're this star athlete and they have all of this pressure on them, that pressure could be too much.
Mm-hmm.
So that in itself is almost a key warning sign of, okay, well, this person has a lot of responsibility. They have a lot of pressure. They have a lot of things that they're doing. They're responsible for leading their teams and whatnot. Like, there's a lot of people looking up to them. They've got a lot going on, and doing that and being a college student and maybe potentially having a part-time job or something on, like, there's so many different factors that play into it. I mean, that's a lot on one person. And
yeah.
Most of them are typically like your typical college age, between like 18 and 25 or so, and like they're still young and they're still learning, and that's a lot of pressure on someone who's freshly out of high school. You know, they're just starting out in the world and trying to find their footing, and they have all of these responsibilities.
Right. And you know, one of the things that we are also, you know, tuning into is that sometimes students are coming from family systems where they don't have models that have talked about the things that have bothered them.
Yes.
And there's kind of this, or they've experienced, you know, mistrust and
right.
harm from systems like healthcare or emergency response. And so that's a barrier too, feeling like,
yes,
if I say something, is anybody even going to care? Am I going to get blamed? You know, am I going to be shamed for speaking up and out about what's going on to me? Am I going to be met with judgment? And so, you know, we have to consider that also could be something that students are coming in with, is their own kind of limited attitudes based on what they've experienced, that could be a barrier to seeking help.
I think that's a really incredible point. We definitely touch on that in a lot of our presentations that we do. There are so many barriers for different people, and there are going to be a lot of students that are just starting out in college that maybe didn't have good home lives or faced adversity from society or have felt shame from people in their life because of who they are, decisions that they've made. It could be as simple as, you know, there's a lot of racism and homophobia in West Virginia. There's a lot of it. And people coming to college are trying to figure out who they are, and they just want to be able to be themselves. But by the time they got there, we don't know what they've experienced. And a lot of the younger students have experienced really hard things throughout their life. You know, there's a lot of children that are living with their grandparents in West Virginia because of overdoses with parents or drug addictions and stuff. So there are some that come in and they've had like substance abuse in their past, or they've come in and they've experienced racism or homophobia or transphobia. And there's a lot of things that would make them mistrusting specifically of adults in their lives. So it's very vital that we have these peer-led groups so that if someone's experiencing something, they can feel more comfortable talking to them, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, you nailed it.
So besides the Green Bandana Project and the suicide vigil, are there other things you guys have been doing on campus this month for suicide awareness and prevention?
We have a Wellness Wednesday social media campaign. So we put content out weekly that helps with mental health promotion. And so in addition to that, we have a program called Coffee with Counselors, where we sit in the Ram's Den one day a month for a couple of hours, and we interact with students and we share information that is vital to mental health promotion and to learning about some of the risk factors that are a part of the risk of depression, anxiety, and eventually, you know, suicidal thinking or behavior. We had Save a Life Day here on campus, which was amazing. That was on September the 14th, where we partnered with folks in the community who are in the recovery field. And we were able to train students and give out Narcan so that people can learn how to save lives and prevent overdose death. And, you know, we know that mental health and substance use and misuse are intricately involved. I have come to see substance use and misuse as pain management. Yes. And, you know, you've got your spectrum. So some people use because they're in social situations and they just want to take the edge off and they want to have a little fun. And then other people, you know, develop a dependency because of the things that have happened to them, because of the feelings that they're trying to numb, because of the need to escape how they feel and what they've been through and how it's impacted them. And then it gets out of hand. Yeah. And, you know, the benefit of training people and getting Narcan into the hands of folks who may be around people who are using is that every life saved is another opportunity for recovery. And if we can save lives and people can go on to do wonderful things and have an impact on other people's lives and be able to raise their children and be able to contribute to the community and be able to pay it forward, like, that is exactly what we should be doing. So all of these efforts kind of tie in to one another, the Rams Rally for Respect, other campus conversations that we've had about civility, equity, inclusion. It all ties together. It's like this tapestry that we are weaving continuously to, I don't know if it's a safety net. I don't know if it's a web of compassion. I don't know if it's like a blanket that we can find comfort in, but I like that analogy of, you know, every one of these threads works together to create this bigger picture that we really belong to each other. And that's something I think that Mother Teresa said, you know, sometime in the past, and that really sank into my heart. We belong to each other. And so the more we see that and the more we recognize our inherent worth that we were born with, no matter what happens to us, we are worthy, we stay worthy, and we can remind each other of that. We can be compassionate and skilled. Doesn't matter if we have letters behind our name. Doesn't matter if we are in a position of authority. We all can make a difference and be here for one another.
I love that. I actually was on campus for the Save a Life Day, and there were a lot more. There was, like, at one point the tent was so packed, and I was like, I really didn't think students were going to care as much. And I love that so many students showed up for that, and they were ready and willing, and they wanted to learn and they wanted to help. And I was like, this is incredible. I was very proud for the school. I was proud for all the students that were doing it, because I was just like, I didn't think it would be. I thought, you know, like maybe like 5-10 kids would show up. There was a line.
Exactly. And can I just turn the appreciation on to you and your organization for a minute and just say that seeing you as much as I have on campus and knowing all of the initiatives that your organization, that EPIC, is helping with in the community, I mean, the work that you all do is so incredibly important. I got my start in working at what is now the Laurel Center in Winchester and, you know, answering a hotline. And I was in the program where we were addressing, you know, intimate partner violence, teen dating violence, domestic violence, and worked very closely with our sexual assault response teams. And the work that you all do is amazing. And the fact that you're reaching out and coming and talking to our campus community about trauma-informed care and how we can increase our understanding of the things that have happened to people that have led to their current behavior that might lead to struggle, that might lead to vulnerability. And that there are ways that we can, through that understanding, help people more impactfully. You know, you teach us about trafficking and what we need to look out for, and do groups on this campus for survivors of intimate partner violence and sexual violence. And it's thank you so much.
We are so excited to have this partnership with Shepherd. I know that it was definitely one of the selling points when I interviewed for this job. I love mm-hmm. Shepherd, and I was like, I mean, if I get to be there more often, then absolutely I want to. Obviously I want it. So I was very excited that we've built more of a partnership, even from just like last year. I feel like we've started to build it up a little more. And I'm thankful to have all of the opportunities to be over there and get to work with student life and counseling. And everyone has been very welcoming and very accepting. And I personally feel like there should be more of a focus on college age students. Like, obviously you want to start early with prevention and you want to start young. And we're doing that. And a lot of agencies and organizations are doing that, and absolutely, but also we don't want to forget the other populations as well. Mm-hmm. And I know personally, just from being in this office, that a lot of our sexual assault clients that we have and a lot of the victims that we service are high school and college age. Like mm-hmm. most of the Jefferson County ones are high schoolers or college age students. So it's like, clearly this is an issue and this is where we should focus our efforts. If this is a problem, then we're going to go to the biggest university in this area and we're going to try to tackle it.
Yep. Together.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much, Wendy. That was really sweet. That was kind. Well, I'm in awe of everything that counseling has done on campus for everyone. And I love that you mentioned the coffees with counselors, because it's not just being like, oh yeah, we're here, we're over in this office. No, you're out there and you're doing the work and you're sitting with them and making yourself available and getting to know people. So it's not like, oh, that's that random lady who's over in this building. Like, no, I know her. She sits in the Ramsden. She wants to talk to us. She wants to make sure that we're okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It is so important that we build these relationships outside of the office so that people will come into the office.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And meeting our students and seeing like what they're wearing and how they're expressing themselves and who they're hanging out with and what music they're listening to. And like, you know, I have so much to learn when it comes to language, like what words are being used to describe this and that and the other that are so different than the words that we use when I was growing up. And so like, I have a lot to learn from these students, as much as, you know, I have to share with them.
Yeah.
So it helps us to really be in the mix.
I love that.
Yeah.
Is there anything you wish that you could have gotten to do this month that you didn't get to do? And it's okay if the answer is no.
So there's always the thought of what more can we do? And I think that's good because it keeps us on our toes. I also think that we need to pause and take time to be grateful for what we were able to accomplish. Because in addition to all of the outreach, you know, we have a team of counselors with full caseloads who provide support groups.
Absolutely.
Who are continually engaging in electronic communication for scheduling or for planning events and activities. So I think, you know, we're doing the best we can with what we've got. So I like to think that everything we did with love and care and intention. And we'll see what happens next.
I couldn't agree more. Everything that I attended, you could feel the love and intention and the care and the compassion. Absolutely. I definitely felt like if they went to any events, the ones specifically held by counseling, you knew that they cared and that they want people to have better mental health and to know that it's okay to struggle and there are people there to help you when you are. I think anybody who went to anything that you all held this month, if they didn't see that, then they weren't paying attention.
Thank you. And if they came, they also saw the dedicated students that were standing right next to us. They did so much work also to make these events happen. We have, you know, Emma Lardner, our peer recovery coach, Samantha Fridley, who is the lead for Rams Care.
Yes.
We have our graduate assistants, Katana Rakestraw and Kiara Rakestraw, who are regularly involved in so many different ways on campus to make improvements, to connect with students. They're getting their graduate degrees. Like, ooh, we get a lot of support. And then the hidden opponent, actually, I have to give a shout out also to a student named Colby, who may also be a graduate assistant right now. I'm not sure, but it's definitely an assistant on the baseball team as a coach.
Yeah.
After meeting him at the vigil, he came and helped our team to do first year experience courses for student athletes to do presentations on mental health literacy and the importance of getting help and normalizing the struggle. And, you know, just so all these beautiful partnerships are blossoming between professional staff and students who are determined and working hard to make a difference. So I feel like we're on a great path.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Is there anything more that you feel like Epic can do to help out on campus, or is there anything you like?
Whatever more we do together, it's going to be amazing.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'd love to marinate on that and consider, but you know, I think, continuing with trauma-informed care is so important because Absolutely. Every single one of us benefits from increasing our understanding of how trauma affects the brain, how it affects our thinking, our behaving, our ability to connect with other people, and ultimately how that's sort of the key. Understanding trauma and its impact on the lifespan is like the key to building resilience. And so, you know, more of that, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're all benefiting from it.
Yeah. I know Katie recently did a presentation there about trauma on the brain, and she has trained myself and my coworker, Melissa, and we've done presentations for other schools.
Yes.
For trauma on the brain. And I feel like that's one of my favorites that we do. And I feel like it's one of the most important, because giving presentations in the FIEX class, the ones Melissa and I have been doing, is on like stalking and domestic violence, dating violence, our services, and then the prevalence of some things on college campuses. But like a common question we would get asked is like, do you get frustrated with the people that you help? And like there were certain questions that they framed in ways that we simply explained it by like, no, because we know the science behind it. Like we understand why they've reacted in ways they've reacted. And once you know that, it changes your viewpoint. Like there are going to be scenarios that you experience where maybe you're frustrated with decisions someone's making, but you can at least understand and come from a better trauma-informed approach once you know the research behind it and why this person might be acting or behaving or making choices that they're making, and why maybe they're not making the same decision that you feel like you would in that scenario, but you're also not in that scenario.
Yes. Ooh, I could not have said it better.
Well, Wendy, do you have any questions for me or anything to add?
I think this has been an awesome conversation, and I feel, you know, excited that we're going to continue working together. And I feel honored that you asked me to join you in today's podcast. It's a real treat.
I'm thankful you accepted.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And, we'll just keep moving forward.
All right. Sounds good to me.
Awesome.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Epic Echo. To suggest topic ideas, guest recommendations, or even just to ask questions you'd like us to answer on air, please find us on social media at the Epic Echo Podcast or on our website at epicwv.org/epic-echo.